You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome in to episode 306 of the Sources Say podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR podcast network. I am your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very excited to break down, I guess I shouldn't say excited because it was very upsetting finish. There's so many highs and lows. I was so excited and then so let down and so excited and so let down. And I think the whole letdown, it was a day of just ridiculousness in my world, because I was supposed to be down in College Station for what was probably the most exciting college game of the season thus far, especially in SEC play. I had a flight at 5:30. I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning to get to the Louisville airport. I go through security, get through and get to the gate, and the gate agent says there is no flight crew yet, so we're gonna have to wait. Nah, no big deal, just 5-10 extra minutes. No big deal. My connection in Dallas is hour and a half ish before I have to get to College Station. So totally fine. No big deal. So I'm sitting there waiting and they say that we're ready, but the flight, the plane, was ice cold and they had to heat the plane up before we could get on. Another 10 ish minute delay. No big deal. You know, we're fine. We're cruising. It's going to be a good SEC game Saturday. No fret whatsoever. We get on the plane, finally, and I'm sitting there for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, no word from the captain, no word. It was just kind of silence, people talking and doing their own thing. It's early in the morning. People are nodding off. It kind of is what it is. And then the plane just shuts off completely, goes complete pitch black, dead silence. Nobody is saying a word. Probably almost 6 o'clock in the morning at this point. And the plane is just done, just shut off. The flight attendants are looking at each other going, yeah, this isn't supposed to happen. So just understand my nerves and my, I've been on 1,000 flights in my day. Not that big of a deal. I'm flights don't necessarily scare me. I actually enjoy the flying experience. This was the first time I think that it kind of hit me of, yeah, I don't know if I'm supposed to be on this plane. I don't know if this is the this is the one for me, especially getting down to College Station. You know, I have to be there in the early afternoon for a basketball game. I don't know if this is the one. So the the gate agent and flight attendant start coming around and saying, yeah, we're going to be delayed quite a bit. We're trying to figure out what this is. A mechanic is on the way. And 5 minutes turns to 20 minutes, turns to 40 minutes. I've missed my connection. And the game is at 2 o'clock. I was supposed to land in College Station at like 9:30-ish in the morning. So the window was already tight as is. There was obviously no extra flight to College Station because apparently that's not a place people fly into. Go figure. So yeah, I ended up not being able to go down to College Station. I was ready. My bag was packed. I was sitting on the plane. I was supposed to be down there for what ended up being an absolute classic. I would have loved to have been a part of it. But unfortunately, American Airlines, just the plane shut off. The plane broke down. So I very happily got off that plane and took my happy butt right back home. And I watched the game on my couch like the rest of you guys. So, it was an absolutely hectic Saturday morning, which turned into an absolutely hectic Saturday afternoon. We are waiting on Sean Smith. He's driving home right now from his parents' house, so he should be coming in any second now. But we are going to be breaking down the 97-92 loss in overtime down in College Station. An absolute heartbreaker, because this was one that it was there for the taking. So many different opportunities for Kentucky to pull that, obviously the defense was what it was, rebounding was what it was, but even all things considered, every chance imaginable was there for the taking for Kentucky, all the way down to the final shot in regulation where Rob Dillingham had a look to win the game with 3 seconds left on the clock. Then Reed Sheppard gets fouled on the offensive rebound and goes to the free throw line, drills both of them, and you kind of feel like you have the momentum there, and there is an opportunity for the taking to win it in overtime and kind of break some hearts down in College Station. Unfortunately, Kentucky doesn't score until the 42nd mark in overtime. It became which team wanted it more, which team was more desperate, and unfortunately, Texas A&M was that team. And I think we need to go back to where the mindset was for both teams going in and how much each individual team needed it. Kentucky was one of the hottest teams in college basketball, really rolling, finding its stride. I'd kind of worked through some of the early kinks of the big issues, and it just kind of made a statement down in Gainesville where they did overcome some rebounding issues and kind of competed against their scouting report and what they did well. Missouri was a tough, hard-fought battle, but you kind of expect that. This was the one that we kind of knew the scouting report going in. This was the best offensive rebounding team in college basketball. And I think I just got a note that VJ Edgecombe just committed to Baylor, which is not a surprise. So I'm glad he's not going to Duke. And we'll talk about that whenever Sean gets on as well. But yeah, it just Texas A&M came in as a very real contender in the SEC. This was a team that people expected to be a legitimate, they could win the regular season title and they could go down to Nashville and win the tournament title. I mean, this was a team that a lot of people had high hopes for, hard, tough nose, gritty SEC preseason player of the year, and Wade Taylor, who, although was shooting very, very poorly entering that game, still did stuff that a lot of people in this conference can't do. He was due. He was shooting historically low numbers entering this matchup. They had lost their last two and five of their last eight. So things had been trending in the wrong direction for Texas A&M. And Kentucky had the momentum going into that game. Texas A&M needed that. They were the desperate team. They had no choice but to win that game, or the wheels could have really, really fallen off in College Station. So I kind of had that mindset going in of prepare for ridiculousness. Prepare for Texas A&M, one of the worst high major shooting team in college basketball, prepare for them to come in and make a dozen threes. Prepare for them to be the aggressor on the glass. Prepare for the kind of straight line drive, one-on-one defensive issues that Kentucky's had. Those are going to present themselves. How can we counter those things? The way that they did a great job down in Gainesville against an equally talented team, they were able to do it down in Gainesville, but unfortunately, I think the desperation factor just was not there on our end, but it was for Texas A&M, and they got their statement win. Credit to them. They made tough shots. Kentucky made some things easy for them, but for a lot of it, several of the shots were just, tough shots, tough makes, and you just got to have to tip your cap when you have Wade Taylor going for 31 points, Radford going for 28 in his own right with 9 rebounds, 4 assists. I mean, the game just kind of was what it was, and it sucks because you wanted Kentucky to kind of overcome those things and say, man, two back-to-back road tests where they kind of backs against the wall mentality just overcame all of that and figured it out. And they were close. Like I said, they were right there for the taking and just weren't able to make it happen. And it sucks. Credit Texas A&M, but we'll talk about kind of what it means when Sean gets in. I believe he is very, very close. But let's talk for a second about VJ Edgecombe, because this was a commitment that in the last 48 hours or so kind of became something that general consensus that it was going to be Baylor. And that's a good thing, because I think Edgecombe going to Duke alongside the other guys that they had, Cooper Flagg and some of the other guys they were recruiting to come in, would have been tough to knock off that top spot. Kentucky is still going after some guys to fill out this class. Obviously, Carter Knox is up there. They're going to continue to monitor the reclass route, see if there's anybody that presents themselves that they really like. Obviously, Darren Peterson is the one everybody wants to know about, and if Kentucky has a chance, we'll see about that. But other names to keep an eye on, and obviously the transfer portal is what it is, but Kentucky couldn't really afford for VJ to go to Duke. They could afford him to go to Baylor. Joe Tipton reported of On3 that Kentucky was out of the race going into the last stretch there, where it was going to be down to Baylor and Duke. And it was, that was my understanding as well, where Kentucky did a very, very good job considering the circumstances. VJ had already cut his list down to 10, and you can't offer that kid 2 months after he had already cut his list down and expect, you know, you expect Kentucky to get in the race down the stretch and have a shot. But for them to overcome him already being kind of deep into that process enough to cut his list down to 10, scholarships had already been flying, you know, months in advance. Kentucky came in late. They did make a comeback, and it was my understanding that Kentucky was the leader there, you know, early November, late November, and even a very small stretch there in early December, where that pitch was kind of resonating with VJ, where, you know, Kentucky was pitching like, hey, we have a very clear role for you, very clear spot for you. Why not go and fill that? You kind of have what we're missing here, a true athletic slasher 3-and-D type guy who you know, really could have fit in well with the other pieces that Kentucky had already signed. And it was something that was working with VJ. And I think at the end of the day, it came down to relationships, the schools that had kind of been there the longest and had, you know, firmly solidified themselves as, you know, hey, we are prioritizing you. Kentucky prioritized late. But I think that just wasn't enough to overcome the guys that had been just around just a little bit longer. And then at the end of the day, Baylor was kind of the better fit in his eyes. He liked the style of play. He liked the guard history, and especially in recent memory of who they've been sending to the NBA. And, you know, I don't blame him. I'm glad he didn't just fall in love with the blue blood. I'm going with whatever the best brand name is. I appreciate that he was able to just kind of separate that and say, this is who prioritized me the most. This is, you know, the better fit for me. I'm going to choose this option. So, you know, credit to him for making that decision. It was a good one in Kentucky's eyes because it meant that they weren't directly competing with Duke. Kentucky does play Duke in the Champions Classic next season. There are other options. This was always one that Cal kind of said, let's just give it a shot. Let's see if we can make this happen. They got very close, and now they can move to options B, C, D, and there's really good talent out there where the gap isn't so significant that, you know, they're heartbroken right now. You can take a Carter Knox right now and be very, very impressed with, you know, his growth at OTE and just kind of continuing that pipeline there in Atlanta. So sucks. Wish Kentucky could have closed the deal on that, but it wasn't something that, you know, is going to just be a backbreaker for this program. And I believe we finally get Sean on. Sean, good evening. What's up, buddy?
Good to be home. Glad I made it. Thanks for did you tell what happened to you yesterday morning? Is that how you started this?
Crap show. It was just ridiculous from start to finish. And I'm very glad that I'm here right now instead of dealing with whatever, you know, like the weather and snow and ice and cold and all that. And I was just watching the Dallas game. I don't know if there was going to be a, you know, anarchy in Dallas, because that was my connection back as well. I don't know what that would have looked like trying to get home today. So I'm just glad that I am out of the Texas realm and I can be here in home. I need to be home right now.
Well, that's actually what just started on my last 15 minutes home. Is it's snowing. So it's really cold too. So the roads are already starting to kind of to get iced over. So if you're out tonight, make sure you're careful and cautious, but not sure what all you've got into yet, but wherever you want to take this thing, let's roll with it.
So VJ Edgecombe just committed to Baylor. I talked about just kind of the significance of that. Why him not going to Duke is probably the bigger storyline here, because Kentucky did come in late. It did feel, especially in that last week, that it wasn't going to be Kentucky. It was going to be 1A, 1B, Baylor, Duke. And if you're going to choose between one of those two, you gotta like that Baylor got him instead of Duke. So thank you, Scott Drew. Shout out to you. That was a very, very good upset victory for you. And you just kind of started it with a little opportunities were there for Kentucky. Texas A&M was the desperate team going in. what it meant for them to win that game versus what it meant for Kentucky to win that game. It was a must win for Texas A&M. It was not a must win for Kentucky. And you kind of felt that at various points, but especially there in that overtime period. And that was kind of the furthest I got before VJ committed. But yeah, game was there for the taking. You wish that it unfolded differently, but not a backbreaking loss, in my opinion, Sean.
It's not. And we talked about it all last week. And we got into the AP poll and where Kentucky would be and stuff, and getting a little ahead of ourselves because we knew that that was going to be a difficult game in College Station. And as you mentioned it, you know, a desperate team. When you're 0-2 in the league and you're sitting there, you can't fall to 0-3 in the SEC and try to kind of start making up ground. And you saw Tennessee play desperate in the final minutes of their game yesterday against Georgia down the stretch. Like you put yourself in situations, but at some point, and I think it will happen with this team, is that they go through the bumps and the grinds of a long season here. And they pulled out a close win at Florida a week ago in the road, a game that they could have lost. They just weren't able to make those same plays and get those same stops down the stretch yesterday. But they'll get a mindset at some point, Jack, that every game is a must win, even though it's truly not. Like, we know that just if you get into that NCAA tournament field, you throw seeding out the window. Anybody can go on a run and win a national championship or get to a Final Four. But the mentality, I thought Kentucky wasn't tough enough yesterday. I thought Texas A&M was the tougher team. I know you and I have talked about the offense and the not too concerned, or we're concerned about defense, but we still thought the offense could outscore teams. They scored 92 and lost in OT. It was some of the rebounds. It was some of the not being able to come up with a defensive stop, and a lot of it was positioning on the glass and defensively that caused Kentucky some trouble yesterday. They missed Adu Thiero big time. Adu is a guy that would have played with some toughness that Kentucky just didn't have yesterday on the interior.
Yeah, it did kind of have that feel. And I appreciate that Kentucky, even considering those, you know, the stats were what they were. We knew that Texas A&M was going to rebound hard, that they had those dudes, especially on the offensive end, to be a nightmare for Kentucky, especially considering kind of the iffiness that we had seen out of Aaron Bradshaw in that area. Ugan Onyenso turns around late in that game and kind of becomes a force on both ends. I mean, somebody that really played his best game as a Wildcat, but early on, I'll be honest, I thought that was a game that Ugo couldn't even play in. I mean, there were some, bobbling balls, bad positioning, as you said, and that still showed up, but he still kind of put things together late to earn his right onto the floor, but still a very, very clear work in progress in that front. And yeah, it just felt like, okay, Justin Edwards, we need you, buddy. He puts things together and has a pretty solid game, but just doesn't take you to that next level. 8-4, hits a couple threes and you know, gets two offensive rebounds. You like that, but they were missing that physicality. They were missing the athleticism and the initiator, the guy that is going to go dunk it on your head, that Adu Thiero who will pin it on the backboard on one end and then go throw down a lob or, you know, draw a foul, get an and one. Like, that was that oomph was what Kentucky was missing. And we kind of knew that. We called it. We felt it going into that matchup that, man, who could you say on the roster right now is that in that enforcer? Name one guy. I mean, Trey Mitchell, probably the closest from a – he'll at least go in there and bang and get you some tough rebounds. But you can't really – you know, DJ Wagner, probably the closest that you're going to get just because of the mindset. It's not even him physically. It's just kind of the mindset he plays with. That's kind of what he does well. You were missing that, and you knew that was going to be the best punch Texas A&M could throw at you, and it felt like from start to finish they just didn't have that counter, and that was clearly Adu Thiero.
It was. I mean, when you don't have one of your toughest guys, if not the toughest guy on your roster, and you're going into that environment, you're kind of obviously you're a man down, but even more significant. That was an Adu Thiero game. That would have been one where I think that his presence would have made a difference. And, you know, you mentioned Ugo and some things, and I went back and rewatched the game and stuff today like I always do. And, you know, I was sending you all in the group text just some plays and some mistakes that not just Ugo made, but everybody made. And, like, I can nitpick something wrong about every single player that they did, especially defensively. And a lot of Kentucky's issues on the glass, Jack, is they're not winning battles initiating contact. like Reed on the final possession of regulation that Kentucky was defending, he is on the high side and never gets position, and A&M gets a basket there or gets a play. I think it was a tip in.
He watches him. Yeah.
Yeah. Just watches him. There were two or three that Ugo had too, where out of ball screens where he was coming downhill and just never got the guy running to the rim again. But that was everybody. Even early on, Kentucky and Texas A&M set the tone at the free throw line with their presence on the offensive glass. Now, the numbers, when you look at them overall, they evened out. Like, Kentucky did some damage on the offensive glass, second chance points. But I thought the impact of what A&M did early just kind of set the tone and gave them some confidence. And that's the last thing that you needed to happen, was them gain confidence. You wanted to break their confidence. But Justin Edwards got a lane violation early in the game because his mind was thinking about, I'm about to get my tail whipped here to give up an offensive rebound. He was trying to get a head start. That was what I'm talking about with the way they set the tone. And some of the tip outs and things. There was a massive play there with Kentucky up 6 or 7 in the second half that ended up getting a tip out in a three. And then what ensued from that was Kentucky, well, give credit to Buzz, he switched up his defense and went zone a couple of trips, and it threw Kentucky off rhythm. A&M got themselves back in the game there, and then I thought that was a huge momentum swing and where the game was. That Kentucky could have put them away a little bit, but they weren't able to do anything with that stretch and that lead.
Yeah, it was that 12-minute mark that Kentucky was up 7, and that was the most Kentucky would lead for the rest of the game. That three was kind of the momentum dagger, if you will. It sucks. Cal talked about the defense, said, you know, we're in the top 50 in overall defensive efficiency. This is not a bad defensive team, but said that a lot of their issues just came as a result of grown man strength, physicality, initiation on the opposition, that it wasn't really a schematic thing or a fundamental thing, but it was just kind of a mindset thing. Do you agree with that? Because on the flip, like it does feel like that's something that you can overcome if it is just a mindset thing. But he kind of said, well, you know, that's kind of what young teams do when you're facing a team of 23, 24-year-olds where they do have the size advantage and the physicality advantage, that grown man strength, you know, that kind of stuff happens. Well, Kentucky's going to be playing those teams in the NCAA tournament. So you got to figure out at some point. I mean, there is at least an avenue there, but what does that look like, Sean, from, you know, put your coach's hat on? What does that look like if that is all it boils down to? And maybe you just disagree entirely after watching the film.
So when I watch the tape with Kentucky, especially defensively, and I'm looking at them, do I think that this team has elite defensive potential in it? I don't. Not elite. Are they significantly better than what we saw and what we have been seeing? Yes. There is. They're a lot better than what we're seeing, because a lot of the things, Jack, are just positional. Like, if you're a step or two off where you're supposed to be, you're going to give up straight line drives. There was a lot of things going on with Kentucky's ball screen coverage yesterday that I could just not figure out. Like, it was different every single possession, and it wasn't just Ugo. It was Trey Mitchell. It was whoever it was. You saw, I think a lot of it too is guys not talking. Especially in these road environments, you got to talk even louder. And I think of it just some communicational things. But Kentucky gave up straight line drive after straight line drive after straight line drive to Texas A&M and to their guards. And you can pull up clips in those middle ball screens when they were flat ball screens. It didn't matter what they were. The big was on the wrong side so many times. And there was just so much miscommunication with where Kentucky wanted to be. There was one play where Ugo came out way too far and ended up being Bradshaw's second foul, right there driving to the basket. Like, it was just their ball screen coverage was terrible for the entire game. And then you compound that with not being able to rebound and not winning position there, and you have a recipe for disaster. And that's how you lose scoring 92 points, and you lose by 5, is because you put those two things together and you get an A&M team that made shots. They hit threes at a higher clip than they have all season. They got to the free throw line and made, what, 19 free throws, I think, 20 yep. free throws, somewhere through there. So
19
they
also, to 30.
They also, I mean, they missed some free throws there, but they still shot a high number of attempts. Do I think that Kentucky is going to be a top 15 team in the country in KenPom defense efficiency? I don't think so. Can they be significantly better than what they were yesterday and be good enough to win games in the NCAA tournament? Absolutely. Somebody also brought up the goaltending thing where Ugo gets the offensive rebound. I hate that. Like, because you just took a possession away from Kentucky because I get it. You thought it was goaltending, but you should review that in that moment and then give Kentucky possession of the basketball on baseline underneath.
Especially when it's a clear recovery. Like, it is a clear 1-2 punch, bang-bang play where it is blocked off the backboard and lands directly in Ugo's pocket. Like, what would it have hurt to have Pat Adams go to the monitor right there and say, oh, hey, this is a pretty crucial decision here. Let's just go ahead and get this right now. What good does it do to wait till that under four media timeout? Like, what, like, there is no benefit to it unless it was I don't even know what scenario you could dream of for that to be acceptable. It's just so egregious where it does, that on paper is supposed to benefit, a goaltend is supposed to benefit Kentucky. And by making that call, it's the exact polar opposite. You now hurt Kentucky. Like, at least find the middle ground there. Okay, well, if we're not going to find that play, at least jump ball. Like, give me a jump ball. Give me something to just waiting till the under four timeout to just review it and just say, yep, we got that one wrong. Because what's stopping them from doing that for every single play, monitoring every single detail of the game, and then just half-ass moving the score to whatever they want at the end of games? Like, what? Why are we stopping at that? It's just nonsense. It really frustrated me in the moment. And then as we watched kind of the clock tick and tick and tick, and we got to the very end, and we got to the end of the regulation, and where those 2 points would have been very significant. I mean, that probably could have been the deciding factor. It really sucks.
And that's the thing too. Like, I get that you don't want to stop play and add on to how long these games are. You're trying to shorten those things. I mean, we've seen the rule changes and stuff with college football, trying to get shorter games. But at the same time, like, going and looking at that during an intermission or during a media timeout, you still not only took 2 points off Kentucky, you also took the offensive rebound chance that they had there that Ugo was going to stick back in. And then that's a possession that Kentucky does not get back. And there was nothing Kentucky did to lose that possession. That's just a possession that's just not showing up anywhere now. It's just empty. Like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's frustrating. But when you got that, and it's not just one thing. It's a combination of a lot of things like that throughout that game where I felt like Kentucky gave them things. You got that. You got a lane violation that gives them a free throw in the first half. I know it's just one play, but that 1 point made a significant difference in the game. You got Antonio Reeves. I still don't know why he threw the pass to Trey Mitchell that got picked off for a basket. Like, that's stuff that we haven't seen from this team, is like a live ball turnover like that that just gives somebody 2 points. All the straight line drops. Like, those things add up. Kentucky still had opportunities, still could have come away with the win. You had some moments that stand out. You had Rob hitting shots to close. You had Reed going to the free throw line and hitting two massive free throws. They're still good within it, but it's another learning experience. And this team was going and is going to lose games in this league, Jack. That's just part of it.
And I think that is why I feel so good about – I mean, God, not good. It sucked. That was a game Kentucky could have won, and it really sucked that they weren't able in those final little nitpicky moments, the little details there at the end where it's just like, dang, it just felt so close. But I don't think you learn much of anything from blowout wins or blowout losses. In a game like this, it kind of had to finish that way to really learn the most from this group, because there is so much on film, as you clearly watched, to go back and look and go, God, what was I thinking there? What were we doing here? Why this? What kind of shot was that? The decision to pass with 10 seconds left, like, what you learned the most. And I know it's coach speak and coach Calism 101 for the, what you either win or you learn, but it did really feel like a win or learn game for Kentucky. I don't feel any different about this team long-term today than I did Friday. Like, I knew that this, they were not going to run the table the rest of the way. They were going to lose games. And if they were going to lose games, this is how they were going to lose them. I mean, it is, if you were on paper drawing up a, okay, here is a blueprint to a Kentucky basketball loss in January of 2024, that is how the game would unfold. Like, I mean, there was nothing that happened in that game where you were like, damn, this guy just played very uncharacteristic basketball. Like, that was very odd of him. Trey Mitchell, probably the closest in terms of some of the decision-making he had. But outside of that, and he still had it, I mean, 8, 13, and 6. He wasn't bad, just didn't make the shots that he usually makes and made some pretty untimely turnovers. But, you know, he's built up a lot of freaking equity with me where I'll live with it because he's also playing 44 minutes at this point. Just we got to get that sorted out. But this was the game plan to beat Kentucky. And it's something that they need to keep in mind moving forward as the games continue to get tough. The road trips continue to be very, very difficult in a league that is projected to have 8 tournament teams right now.
I mean, it's like you said, like if you could script the loss, like we thought it would look like that. And I think to this date, the only thing that's happened that I didn't expect to happen was probably, well, obviously the loss, the quad three loss they had in December. Like, that's the one that you look back and like, eh, that one's a little weird, or really weird. Losing a road SEC game early on with the schedule that they have, going to Florida, then going to A&M, I don't think that losing one of those would shocks anyone, especially the way the AP poll and stuff and the shakeups happening on the road in college basketball right now. I mean, there's a lot of teams losing basketball games. I'm with you. It doesn't change anything about it. Maybe it just may. I will admit it opens my eyes a little bit that they're a little bit further behind defensively than what I thought they were. And maybe I should have paid a little bit more attention to Illinois State's offensive rebounding numbers a few weeks ago and shouldn't have just kind of dismissed it because of how they won the glass against North Carolina. I guess I just assumed that wouldn't show up. But when I turn on the tape and see that it's positioning, it actually gives me confidence that it's going to be okay. That it's not just, I'm not looking at this without being able to see it. Like, I'm able to look at this and say, okay, like all of these things, when they turn on the tape this weekend and then they look, these coaching staff and all these guys are going to be able to go like, man, this is all stuff that we can fix. But now it's just about breaking habits. And these guys in high school, Jack, and a lot of other things, they've had the athleticism probably at times to just go get a ball. Right now, A&M was winning the battle physically, hitting Kentucky before Kentucky was making contact. Whoever initiates contact first on the glass, guess who's going to win it? The guy that gets positioned and establish it. There was one play, I think it might have been Justin, gave up a straight line drive. I sent it to the group today.
It was Justin.
And then just lost the battle too. On the glass, and that was two right there. Ugo did the same thing. Reed Shepherd did the same thing. I can go down the list.
Every guy.
And point out every one individual play on the glass or something like that about every single guy that played, and it was all positioning. The one thing that did confuse me, though, was the ball screen coverage. And if we could put up some graphics of just still pictures, I could show what I'm talking about. But, like, A&M wasn't really doing anything to get some of the easy straight line drives that they got. They did go some side Spain action that confused Kentucky there a couple of times, which I think that's a really neat thing to see college coaches do. You see a lot of teams do it in the middle third of the floor. They did it on the side of the floor and got a three there in the second half. So A&M did some good stuff. And that was a team that's a really well-coached team. Like, they have the mindset and the attitude of their head coach, and they played like it Saturday. Like, they played tough. And Kentucky just wasn't tough enough. That's the one area Kentucky has to get better at, is some toughness, the ability to make the tough plays. But they were without the one guy that I think is the toughest on the team, and that's Adu.
And Adu's case is weird, man. It's frustrating because I think it's kind of I think it's multiple things that are – it's kind of an issue with Adu. And – I think initially the thought was it was just something limited to back spasms and, you know, it was something you just kind of, cause he was having back spasms even before his fall against Louisville in the Yum Center. Like, he was already dealing with that several weeks back before that. And it's always something that's kind of been something he's dealt with, but it was kind of apparent there in, you know, early December. And he kind of played through it and everything was fine. He was actually as bouncy as he's ever been, feeling as confident and, you know, physically well as possible. Just, you know, something he had to overcome. And then the fall happens. And I think they initially thought that it was just kind of, you know, that flaring back up. But I think as time has kind of crept forward and it hasn't just disappeared in the way they expected, and it was kind of more of a tweak than anything. And I was told, I think, Illinois State game that it would probably be a couple weeks, but it wasn't a long-term issue. It was just something that, say, he was clearly there was discomfort there. He had to figure that out, and it just hasn't kind of gotten to that next step. And I think that's why Cal said after this last game that he still had some tests to do. I think, or maybe it was before the game, that he had tests to run before he could get, you know, fully cleared and start taking the next steps toward returning. So I think we should hit pause on Adu for a minute. Like, I think that as tough as that is, because he is kind of that enforcer, the guy that we need right now in conference play. But like, I'm not expecting him Wednesday. I'm not. And I still think even Georgia might be pushing it. I think we could probably start at that point saying, all right, let's start anticipating a return here shortly. But I'd give it another week. I would. Like, I still think it's going to be a minute, and it's something that they're trying to figure out behind the scenes. I think that the tweak was just a little bit more than anybody around there had any idea. How do you combat that, Sean? That's my question. If just assuming we don't have Adu for a minute, what does that look like? Because I think the blueprint and game plan right now is there for the taking about how to kind of attack Kentucky without him.
It is. And you're attacking Kentucky where they're weakest. It's the toughness. Somebody has to emerge, and some toughness has to be to kind of come into play here. Like a willingness to rebound. I mean, it's not like there's a ton of technique. It's legit just positioning. It's having a will to do it and fight. And be the aggressor there. Like, it's the same thing like with defensive stuff. Like, you have to be disciplined in who you are and position. And I want to see Kentucky make these adjustments. Like, this is a big game coming up here Wednesday night. Like, this is a Mississippi State team that has just loaded its SEC schedule on the front end with quad one games. I mean, they've played quad one after quad one to start league play. I think this is a stretch coming up of like six straight, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe even more. Like, so they're going to be a team that's battle tested and already got one against Tennessee last week. So Trey Mitchell had to play 44 minutes again yesterday. I know a lot of that too is no ado. Bradshaw just could not stay on the floor. The other side of this, Jack, is I don't think I ever thought at any point that Ugo would have to play the number of minutes that he played yesterday. And that's not the ideal thing for Ugo. I really don't think it is. I think 10, 15 minutes tops would be the perfect stretch run for him, around 15 minutes. Now, he did do some good things, and that's why I'm not going to nitpick the bad, because, like, this is a guy that I still think is working his way back into it, and he did show some fight at times. And I was pleased with where he is, and it's kind of opened my eyes a little bit that he can help in certain situations. But 34 minutes is not – ideal for what we're wanting there at that spot. So AB's got to be able to stay on the floor. I know the first foul, I don't know if you agreed with it as much or not. There wasn't a lot there. And then the second one, obviously, it was, I can't remember who it was that it wasn't. Somebody was in the wrong spot and ended up allowing him to get a foul and end up getting another one of those straight line drives. Like, it's just, you have to be able to guard the basketball and contain it. But overall, find some toughness. John Calipari will get toughness out of these guys at some point, collectively. Like, you have mentally tough guys, but you got to have some physically tough guys there as well. And it doesn't come down to just size, Jack. A lot of it comes down to wanting to do some of the dirty work. And the dude does the dirty work. And with him out, somebody else has to show up and do it. So where's it going to come from? It has to be, to me, it has to be a collective thing. that Kentucky just has to have a mindset here that they want to be tough and they want to not get killed on the glass. Like I said, A&M dictated it early and set the tone. Kentucky has to do that early in these games as well.
And there's no reason why it can't be Justin. Like, I know he isn't the physical presence, but he's got the clearly the athleticism. He's clearly got the length. And I mean, he's got a nose for the ball, but there is no excuse for Antonio Reeves to finish with 6 rebounds and Justin only have 4. There's no reason, no excuse for that whatsoever. Justin kind of, if Adu is going to be out for another week plus, Justin Edwards has to break through. Like there is no other option. The opportunities are going to continue to be there for Justin, and he's so close. Sean, like we keep talking about him on this show and keeps kind of saying, oh, his time's coming. His time is coming. And he hit those 2 threes in this game. And I'm like, and he got a couple quick rebounds too. And I remember going, this might be it. Like it felt right there. And then disappearing act. It's just, we cannot have him be a non-factor on the floor. I mean, overtime box score. I mean, goose egg. He wasn't there. And I think down the stretch, I just don't know what it is. I don't know what it's going to take for Justin to break through, but he has no choice. If Adu is going to be out, it has always kind of been who is going to emerge out of those two playing the similar position, similar types of players. Obviously Adu has the size factor, but you know, I think Justin has that on paper, the skill advantage. I mean, he has at least that. He's not just a bull in a china shop like Adu kind of feels at times. Like Justin has some finesse to him. It's just that we got to break through at some point. It has to happen. There's no other option except for him to break through. I mean, there's no excuse for Antonio to have 6 rebounds and 4 for Justin. I mean, that they're just.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
That can't happen. So I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I hope that it's Justin. I hope that it is.
Yeah, I hope so too. And another thing too that kind of was missing yesterday was the transition game. And when you can't grab defensive rebounds, you're not getting transition opportunities. Like that was the other key to me going into the game was Kentucky had to win the glass on the defensive end. And when you do that, the way A&M goes to the glass aggressively, if you just secure a rebound, you're going to have some opportunities in transition. And Kentucky just could not corral rebounds enough to get out and run. The times that they did, they got some baskets and things. But overall, it is still an early January loss to a team that was desperate. It's a quad one road loss that I don't think will be anywhere near a quad two. And I think overall, I think Kentucky will be fine. Now, am I concerned about the defense? Yeah.
Trending that way for sure.
And the reason being is because this isn't just a trend that this year. This is a trend that's been 4 years now. Like, this is a Kentucky program that has not finished above 35 in defensive efficiency since 2018 was the last time that they finished there. And I think they were eighth that year, 2018-19, the P.J. Washington year. You had the Emmanuel Quickley team that I think got to 35. And then, obviously, the B.J. Boston team I think was – I'm not sure where – it was lower too. But I'm talking like 35, 36, 54. Like, this hasn't been an elite defensive team. The offensive numbers are elite. This has to get into that top 30, I think. I really think that they've got to find a way to settle between 20 and 30. I don't need them to get the 10. I don't need them to get the 14 to 15. And then when it comes down to it, Jack, like, you just got to be that for 6 in a row. you don't have to be it for the overall course of the season. You just have to do it for six straight. And I want to see flashes and glimpses of it between now and the end of the season where Kentucky can put good defensive nights together. Because you got to win six games in a row. Is that the longest winning streak of the season for them, a six? Was that what they just had?
I think they
had one earlier in the year that was a little longer before UNC.
I think it was fours. I think six straight.
Okay. So they
have two, four, six. Give us eight. Let's go another eight.
What I want to see here in league play, and I said this last year, and I don't think Kentucky ever got to this point, was I wanted to see them win six straight in the league. Six just tough games at some point down the stretch here. I want to see it. I want to see them put six performances together. And you know what I want to see, though? A combination of winning games in different ways. Mm-hmm. Like, because that's what you get in the NCAA tournament. There's no, like, these teams that go on NCAA tournament runs, every game is different. Every matchup is different. You've got to be able to win games in different ways. We've seen this Kentucky team, you know, like, score at a fast pace. I want to see one where they just lock somebody up and get stops and win games. And I want to see it all kind of come together. There's still plenty to play. I mean, we're still talking 2 months before this team has to be what it wants to be. Like, there's a lot of growth, and the ceiling is still way up here. Like, ultimately, they're going to be fine. Like, this loss does not change how I feel about what they can do. It opens my eyes a little bit more to some issues defensively that I thought the ball screen positioning and coverage was the worst I had seen it. That has to get fixed, and that'll be something to pay attention to Wednesday night, because these coaches watch tape, and they're going to try to attack Kentucky in similar ways.
Mississippi State's a tough team. I mean, that's
they are.
That's a group. We said earlier to open SEC play, what did we say? We named off some teams that are kind of like, ooh, we're keeping a close eye on them. And Mississippi State was the one that I kind of had circled, the way they play without Tolu Smith and him ramping back up in conference play. I mean, that's a tough, hard-nosed team as well. That, again, if you were to draw up a game plan to beat Kentucky, everything was out there in College Station. I mean, that was the thing. And it sucked because we kind of named every little detail. I mean, down to Wade Taylor, I mean, the only he was one of two players in high major basketball with two games of 30 plus points against ranked opponents. Him and a kid from Villanova. Those were the only two players in college basketball that had done that, and he had come into this game shooting like 25% in his last two games. It was kind of one of those, he was due, what are we going to do to figure that out? And he comes out and immediately starts firing, gets a couple tough shots early, kind of gets that rhythm and momentum going, the rebounding, the straight line drives, how they attack you offensively, the switching defensively, the zone, the random, like everything that we kind of they didn't show us anything like, oh shoot, that didn't show up on tape. Like, it was the exact game plan we kind of knew going in, and they still kind of beat us in the ways that they wanted to. So that's what kind of concerned me. Mississippi State's going to be very similar. Like, I'm this one is one that we should not be overlooking in the slightest, because that could be one that, like, Kentucky could lose this game. Especially if Adu remains out. That's a game that Kentucky could lose. And I like you, want to see them stack together six games. And, I mean, Mississippi State, tough Georgia team. We just saw what they did against Tennessee. At South Carolina, that's a tough one. Arkansas, talking about desperate. I mean, if we just said Texas A&M was desperate, look at what Arkansas is, because that team is fighting for its life right now. And then Florida, we know what they are. And then Tennessee would be the last one of that six. That's a stretch right there. And that would prove to me is what we talked about. If they can stack together these six, all right, let's ride. Like, I'll feel a lot better. But now, you know, this wasn't a must win, but now that you've lost this one, you got to start stacking some performances together to kind of build back that trust, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to. And Mississippi State coming in, 28th overall in KenPom, 70th in adjusted offense, and 9th in adjusted defense. So, like, a good defensive team that that's going to try to dictate their pace and dictate their game and do some things. And you know, after watching that tape, they're going to get physical with Kentucky. And John Calipari's got to turn on the tape here with these guys and a lot of film session too, I think, with Kentucky's guys over the next few days. Probably already had some of that, you know, today, if I'm guessing, of showing guys that a lot of it was you cannot just run to the rim in this league.
Nope.
You can't just run to the rim in Division I college basketball at all. Like, you can't out-jump people. You have to initiate contact first. Who wins first and who initiates contact will come up with a rebound. And if you got four doing it, and like a lot of times you saw Kentucky there and in position or somebody could get it, but one guy would miss. And that's the guy that wouldn't come up with the rebound initially, like securing it, but would get a hand on it to keep it alive, and then somebody else would get it. And like I said, it was established at the free throw line. Go back and watch A&M's first two or three trips to the free throw line and watch the will to go to the glass that they had. And then go watch the lane violation that Justin got. That's why he did it. Because they had already established a mindset. And when you got that on your mind, that's tough. Because you're already thinking about, man, I cannot give up an offensive rebound right here. I cannot give up an offensive rebound. And guess what happens then? Then you have a miscommunication in ball screen. Yep. Or you're miscommunicating somewhere else because you're not really confident in what you're doing. A lot of it is communication. Go and watch. There was one where Robin Reed had a miscommunication too. There was another one early where DJ Wagner gets – there was a pin down and they gave up a three with Aaron Bradshaw's man. It's just not communicating. A lot of it's not talking. And I'm sure that that's a topic of conversation going into the week as well. So a lot of what I'm trying to say is a lot of Kentucky stuff is fixable. It's not like that. It's not like be in better position, communicate better, and have a will on the glass. Do those three things. And I think the numbers go up and you become a better defensive team without having to block 9-10 shots a game. You can get better by just being fundamentally sound, having a hand up. How many threes did they hit where, sure, they're 2 or 3 feet behind the three-point line, but guess what? This is Division I college basketball. That's a good shot for a lot of people. You got to have a hand up. Like, a lot of stuff was just bad habits and not playing fundamental basketball on the defensive end of the floor. That's fixable.
Yeah, I completely. And all things considered, as ugly and wish we could have had it moments in that one, we were an inch away from Rob Dillingham shutting it all up anyway and winning the game at the end of regulation. Like, that's kind of what this team is. And that's why I don't think that we should just completely throw our hands up in the air and say, oh, woe is me. This team stinks. We are who we thought they were. Like, we, there's no reason for that, because all things considered, as we said, they played right to the game plan. They drew up the perfect opportunity to beat us, and Rob's shot falls at the end of regulation and we win that game. And I loved the quote, Sean, loved the quote, Rob saying, I thought the shot was going in, because we all did. I mean, when it rimmed out, I was like, I mean, I don't think you could get any closer. Like, that shot was in. He thought it was in as well. And he said, I think the only reason I missed that shot is because I'm going to make it in March. And that's all I ask. Rob is the type of guy to have a moment, you know, like the Aaron Harrisons, the Malik Monks against UNC, those Brandon Knights, those guys are wired differently. They are wired to have moments. Rob Dillingham, he kind of had his own little mini moment against Kansas with his kind of like, oh, he is legit. Like, this is the guy that we kind of dreamed of. He kind of almost had his own mini one hitting three straight in College Station. And had he made that shot, that would have been his moment, but he didn't get it, which means that, okay, if it's not coming in this one, when is it going to come? And for him to already in his head be thinking, I wish I did. I felt it. I thought it was coming, but I'd rather have it in March. That's the mentality you want this group to have. They're thinking of the winning plays. They're thinking of, he made some dumb decisions late. I still do not for the life of me understand why A, they even started initiating the offense as early as they did when it's a game-winning attempt. That part confused me. I don't know the mindset behind passing it to DJ, where I think in even DJ's mind, he thought Robbage has just made three straight. Why on earth is he going to give up the rock? Like, there's no reason for me to even touch the ball. So when Rob did kind of make the quick swing, DJ should have caught it. Yes, obviously. But I get it. Like, I understood where it could have been like, oh, shoot, I wasn't even mentally engaged enough for, like, I wasn't thinking that it was going to come to me. Little things like that. I appreciate that he's already thinking of what's next, thinking, all right, live and you learn. I wish I had saved the day and won that game, but if I wasn't going to have my moment here, let's focus on my next moment of when that's going to come in a do or die game, backs against the wall in March. That's a winning attitude and response that you want to see from a guy like Rob Dillingham.
It is. And each game presents learning moments and opportunities. And I feel like this will be one of those that Kentucky looks back on that they learned from and learned in late game situations and things. And I love, like you said, I loved Rob's quote. And I trust Rob to make a shot when it comes down to it in March. Like, he's definitely fearless and not afraid to take them. And you want those guys on your team, you know, for the most part. And, you know, I thought DJ did some good things yesterday.
He's stacking performances.
Reeves hit some early threes that really kept pace, you know, kept them out of pace with A&M, because A&M come out and hit some early shots and they needed those three early threes from Antonio. So Kentucky's still figuring some things out. I think Cal is still figuring out minutes and where he wants to go with this rotation. Where does Justin play into this? Where does Adu play into this when they eventually do get him back? What happens here with Bradshaw? Like, that's the guy that I'm looking at Wednesday night that needs to come out and play well. Like, that's the guy that I want to see. Here's one of the images I was talking about. So, you know, shot's about to go up. I think that this was the play that Justin Edwards got beat off the bounce, and then Kentucky had to do an X out on the off the pass out. But look at the positioning, Jack. I mean, Edwards isn't winning that. And
no,
what that
not even close.
No, what that resulted in is Trey takes the guy at the elbow, and Justin never gets in front. You know, Rob never gets there, and it results in a tipped out offensive rebound, you know, for Texas A&M. So just things like that. And it's like Justin went. I don't know if I have the next still frame, but Justin, like, goes, but then sees he's not going to win it and then kind of just gives it up. And then the next thing you know, they get a hand on it, and it's another offensive rebound, another opportunity for A&M to get points. So stuff like that is what I'm talking about when it comes to positioning, because Reed did force a closeout in a readjustment on a shot attempt. So just things like that. Like, you got to build it. You got to fight. You got to win it. Rebounding is winning it before the ball ever hits the rim. You got to win that battle before the ball ever comes off the rim. Who wins that battle gets the rebound probably 9 out of 10 times, unless it's just a long bounce.
And how awesome was Reed smiling, stepping up to the line and drilling those threes in a regulation? Like, that was a moment when he hit those two, I said in my head, we're winning this game. Like, that was the ultimate bone crusher down in College Station. Them thinking, oh, well, we got this one in the bag. We got this one locked up. And he goes to the line and hits those two with 0.4 seconds left on the clock. That had to have been just a balloon full of air just getting flapping around in the wind. Like, there's no way that fan base thought in that individual moment that was going to lead to what happened in overtime. So, again, inch or two here or there. I mean, it just every opportunity was there. That sequence where Ugo gets the ridiculous block, chance to go out and transition score, I believe, to tie it. And, I mean, momentum kind of flip in that direction. And Trey Mitchell throws that errant pass in transition, turns it the other way, turns into a dunk. I mean, that's a 4 or 5 point swing potentially that, you know, little things, like the little tiny details. I love that moment. Just so cool. 0.6 left on the clock, him stepping up to the line. I like this team. I really, really like this team. And I like that we have opportunities like this to look at and go, damn, that sucked. and say, how do we respond? What's next? Because like this team is wired differently. They have that kind of that will to win of a, all right, should have had that one. So many opportunities were there. What can we do next to move on, go to the next page? And as you said, Sean, stack six straight performances. Like this does kind of have that feel to it of you get that one setback. They're going to start throwing haymaker after haymaker after haymaker and start learning how to put stuff together. So I really, really like this group's mentality. Should have had this one, could have had this one, but I feel no different about them today as I did 2 days ago and how I'm going to feel about them in a week. I mean, I SEC play is tough, man. This is a group of eight teams, probably potentially nine, that could make the field. I mean, it's a really good group, and games like this, regardless of what happens the rest of conference play, this game will have Kentucky prepared for March. Don't care what your argument is. This game is a March Madness game that now they know why they lost, how they lost, and now they can figure out how to make it one step back, two steps forward.
Yeah, and like I said, learning opportunities, Kentucky will be fine. Those clips and those things that I've been pulling and showing you, like, you best believe Kentucky and their staff is showing, I'm guaranteed, the exact same clips. I just sent Daniel another one because I'm not wanting to pick on Justin. So I sent one of Ugo. I don't know if you'll be able to get up on the screen in time or not, but it was like a sequence where it was another offensive rebound. Like, it's just, and it's just, I'm trying to show, like, because I'm a lot of people catch this stuff, but the game is so quick a lot of times that if you don't, like, go back and watch it and watch it and watch it, you miss some things in the moment that you don't see. So there's actually a still graphic before that too, but Ugo does not have position there at all. So you got one guy, I think that's Trey, in the middle of the floor there with somebody. So there's one guy right now that can get an offensive rebound. It's the guy right in front of Ugo. And then the clip before, you know, Ugo wasn't able to get position. So it's just they won position, and it doesn't matter that Trey has his guy boxed out. If one guy's off and one guy doesn't have leverage and the ball just so happens to be right there, it was another offensive rebound and another extra opportunity for there it is. So there's the start of it. So there's where the shot goes up. And then you saw where the second still image was of where Ugo was. So you got to be able to have some toughness and some physicality about you to get position, because if one doesn't have it, Jack, that's just an opportunity for an extra offensive chance for Texas A&M, and they got another one on that possession.
Huh, little things. If we are seeing it on film and on our little show, I think they have it up in the Joe Kraft Center practice film room up on the projector screen in 4K with big red circles around each one of these little segments going, buddy. Come on, man. Like, look, we can't draw this up for you any better. I mean, it's right there. Throw a body on somebody. Get yourself in position. Like, I mean, it's that.
There's the whole sequence. Scroll through them, Daniel. All through it. Put up the first one, and you can see, I think it's Reed that closes out. So there's the shot attempt, and look at where Ugo's at positioning-wise. And then you go to the second clip or the second still image, and there's where we're at. And then the third one, his man's got the rebound. Like, it's not crazy. You look at it and you have to win the battle of position. And if you do that, more often than not, you're going to come away with the rebound. And Texas A&M was tougher than Kentucky at doing that.
Yep, is what it is. We're starting to wrap up here. But before we do that, a quick message from our latest partner, Monticello Bank.
Well, hello, Cindy.
A lot of banks are changing hands these days. Not Monticello. We've been building relationships since 1895. And with each passing year, we've grown.
Hello, Cindy.
Hi.
And expanded our services to meet the needs of the communities we serve.
Aren't you forgetting something?
Monticello Bank, Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
while we're at it. Sources Say is also brought to you by Andy Ludicky and MyPerfectFranchise.net. Andy is a franchise consultant as well as franchise owner and helps people find franchises that fit their skill sets, financial requirements, time to commit, and more. His services are 100% free, and he is here to help. If you have any questions about business ownership, you can learn more and contact Andy anytime at www.myperfectfranchise.net. Sean Smith, this was good. Nice little therapy session. Nice little chance for me to talk about how ridiculous my non-trip to College Station was. I still can't believe that was yesterday. It feels like 4 days ago. Like, it just 48 hours of hell, I guess you could say. But good learning experience for all of us. Learn to when a plane completely shuts off and the lights turn out and the flight attendants look at each other like something is very not right here. Let's pretend like we're not scared. That's your cue to get the hell off the plane like I did. And learning experience for Kentucky down at College Station to throw a body on somebody. Let's get that positioning right.
Absolutely. Glad that you didn't have to experience a too crazy of a day. And I'm glad that you're home safely tonight and you were able to sleep in your own bed last night after a loss. But if they could have pulled that thing out, you probably would have been sick that you weren't there to
watch. I already had a tweet that said, I'll never forgive you at American Airlines. Like, I already had that in my head thinking that, man, if that Rob shot fell, I would have blown a gasket. Like, I even thought, I mean, I would have loved to have been there. Like, I mean, for sure. It was a great game, classic, just finished in the way that we didn't hope for. It was a classic for the other team. But yeah, I in my head, I thought, man, I will never forgive American Airlines for this. And I want to know, somebody that you will freely admit you're not an airplane guy, like, they're just not, what would have been your reaction in that moment? No, like, I'm dying to know. You go forward with your idea. All right, fine. I'm gonna get on a plane. We're gonna get this over with. We're flying. We got to make this happen. What would have been your reaction in that moment? Pitch black.
You've been around me before. You know what my reaction would have been. You would have had to pick me up and take
get me off this damn plane.
if anyone knows me in like moments like that, it's you. So you would have probably been having to find a new co-host.
You would have been having a no-fly list.
Because I don't know if I would have survived. For sure. Like, oh, man.
God.
We've had some situations, but that would have been the one that got me. That would have been it for me.
Whew. Well, I'm glad we're through it. Tough weekend. We'll respond. Big opportunity for Kentucky to respond Wednesday against Mississippi State. We are very excited for that one. We'll see you at Rupp Arena. We will both be there in person, live and in action. So can't wait for that one. Yeah, let's make this happen. It's going to be a fun one. We'll be back Thursday night, I believe, for our next Sources Say. So Sean, before that, where can fans find your work?
You can follow me on Twitter at GBBCountry.
Find me on Twitter as well at Jack Pilgrim KSR. Go subscribe to KSR Plus. We have an absolute blast over there. All the intel scoop, conversation, rumors, rumblings, everything comes there first. So if we talk about something on this show, guarantee you it's already a day or two removed on KS Sports. So go subscribe. We have a blast talking to the KSR crew, and it's building a nice little community over there. So make sure you go on and do that, Sean. Let's get out of here, and we'll see you back on Thursday for another jam-packed Sources Say podcast. We will see you then.